Hey everyone, happy Friday. It is December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas. Welcome to episode number 5 of The Drop Set. I am Darren Starr, as usual, your host and entertainment for the next 30 to 45 minutes. So thanks for joining me. Appreciate you bringing me along on your cardio or whatever the hell you're doing right now. So thank you. It's good to have you here. What are we talking about today? So we've got a couple of topics on the agenda. We're going to talk a little bit about efficiency in the gym, how to make the most of your time there, and if you're a little pressed for time, how you can still get the most out of it. And then also a very timely discussion about coping with the holidays as well. So this is something that comes up for me routinely throughout the year from many directions. So I work with a handful of clients, and you know, almost all of them, every time a holiday comes around, will ask, what am I doing for this holiday? What can I get away with, etc.? So I kind of want to address that from a big picture view and then look at some tactical ways to approach it as well. So it's been a week since the last update here. So what's happened since then? Not a whole lot. It's been a lot of holiday prep. You know, the band is on a nice little month-long hiatus after our last performance in early December. So we'll be reconvening either next week or the following week to get ready for a slate of shows that we have lined up for January, February, and March, which will be fun. And I saw Rogue One on Monday. So spoiler alert, it's awesome. But you're coming from a guy who, you know, grew up with the original movies. So, you know, I'm a little biased. I even thought Phantom Menace was good when it came out. I'm like, that's pretty cool. And then I rewatched it, admittedly without volume, but I rewatched it when it was on, cable TV over the weekend. And, I'm like, oh my God, what a horrendous piece of trash that movie was. It was so bad. I must have really been smoking the Star Wars crack when I watched that the first time and I thought it was decent. I mean, I wasn't like super thrilled about it, but I'm like, all right, cool. You know, it's Star Wars. It's back. All right, cool. But man, watching it now, it does not hold up well. You want to talk about a flaming dung heap of a movie? That is it. Even if it didn't have the high expectations that I placed upon it as a Star Wars movie, just as a general movie, it's bad. Oh, bad, bad, bad. Anyway, so that's what's new. If you haven't seen Rogue One, I would recommend checking it out. let's jump into a little Q&A. We've got one today. This is one that comes up a lot. So when I start working with a client, a lot of the times they know that they want to compete because they've talked to a friend that's done it before. They don't know anything about it. And so I'll just ask them, like, do you know what division you're interested in? And they'll be like, well, I don't really know what the difference is, and I don't know what's best for me. So that is really the question here is, you know, what competitive division is best for me and my body type? So we can address that. I mean, it's a two-part discussion. Obviously, you've got part of the discussion for men and part for women. So, you know, men, there used to not really be a choice. It was, okay, bodybuilding, that's all you got. And then some years back, they introduced men's physique. And then most recently, they've introduced classic physique as well. So you do have some more choices there. For women, you know, back in the day, it was just bodybuilding. You know, back in the 80s, that's all they had. And now that's gone, effectively. But then they've added, you know, fitness and figure over the years. They've added in bikini. And then most recently, they've added in women's physique as well. And then bodybuilding has been kind of phased out. So you got a lot of options for women, a handful of options, and growing one for men. I think it's kind of a problem, actually. And I've written about this on my website before. All of these divisions, they serve to make the shows larger and longer, and they're often run by people who don't have the greatest organizational skills to begin with, so when you add more people into the pot, it turns into just a giant ball of chaos, which is not good. And then the shows run long because, you know, especially with classic physique that they've just added, there's posing routines. Women's physique has posing routines. There's only so many routines you can sit through from people that you don't know before you're just looking at your watch every 5 minutes saying, really, are we still watching this stuff? Come on. It's a lot to ask an audience to sit through. And so I think they really need to take a look at the length of some of those posing routines, if a division really warrants having a posing routine, etc. I'm all for upsetting the apple cart a little bit to make the shows a more enjoyable experience for competitors as a whole and for the audience watching it. So I will talk about that further. But for right now, competitive division. So let's start with men. It's pretty easy and pretty cut and dry for men. So, if you look and do a Google image search, and it's a podcast, so I don't have the ability to throw images up for you, but if you search for men's bodybuilding, everybody knows what that looks like. If you search for men's physique, people have a pretty good idea of what that looks like as well. And then classic physique is kind of in between the two. But, you know, you could take a guy and, you know, if it's the right guy, you could put him in all three divisions and he wouldn't necessarily look out of place as long as he's wearing the right stuff for the appropriate division. So, you know, typically it's going to be bodybuilding, classic physique, men's physique in descending order of muscularity. And also there are expectations for conditioning. So bodybuilding needs to be the sharpest. Classic physique, you can get away being a tiny little bit softer, and then men's physique a tiny little bit softer from there as well. Now, if you look at the Olympians, like the you know, men's physique, Olympia, etc., you know, they're getting so much bigger. It is absolutely outgrown what it was initially intended to be. And this, again, I feel like I'm just railing against the NPC here. They're just unable to unable to enforce their judging standards, or unwilling to, I don't know. So, you know, the men's physique today is probably, you know, at the upper echelon, it's probably 10 to 15 pounds heavier than it was when envisioned. So they've put in size limitations for classic physique, like weight limits. So if you're in a specific height class, you have a range of weights that you need to be in. So that's one way to enforce that. I like the fact that they're making the attempt, at least. But also, men's physique is very much the, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch style posing. It's, you know, it's not quite that, but it's much more casual. You know, it's knee length board shorts, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous. But nonetheless, it is what it is. Classic physique is more like, you know, the traditional bodybuilding briefs. And then the bodybuilding show, the bodybuilding class is division is more about, you know, the more modern bodybuilding trunks with less coverage. So for guys, it's pretty easy. You know, you can kind of tell, you know, the same traits are rewarded in all divisions. You know, you're looking for, you know, X frame, V taper. You're looking for, you know, just overall generally pleasing aesthetics. You're looking for good symmetry. You're looking for good size. You're looking for good conditioning. It just comes down to degrees. I would say for most NPC shows, it's very difficult to be competitive as a natural athlete unless you are competing in a specifically natural NPC show for bodybuilding. So classic physique, men's physique, you can be much more successful there. But even still, as we've talked about previously when talking about, you know, drug tested shows versus not, you've got to know what you're up against for sure. So you can, this applies to men and women universally. And the way that I usually answer this question when asked, you know, what division is best for my body, is I'll present somebody with a series of images, a representative example of each division, and I will say, what appeals to you the most? Because it's not necessarily about, you know, making yourself fit into a specific division or going into a division that you feel like you would be the best fit in right now, but where would you like to fit? You know, because ultimately, when you compete, you're on stage for, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5 minutes, depending on the size of your class and how many comparisons they do, or maybe longer than 5 minutes. I've seen that for sure. But you've got to have your body for 365 days out of the year. So you should make it what you want it to be. And if that means, hey, you know what? I really want to compete in bodybuilding. I think I'm a little undersized, but I think I want to do it. Great. Do it. Or make that the long-term goal and work up to it. Maybe start with classic physique. If the intention is to go to bodybuilding, I wouldn't even bother with men's physique just because the presentation is so different. It could end up affecting how you train. You know, you may end up de-emphasizing legs, God forbid, just because they're not going to be seen. So classic physique will keep you a little bit more accountable there. But ultimately, I mean, and like I said, for women as well, look at where you want to take your physique, and that's the division you should aim for. And maybe that means you take more time before you get ready for your first show, or maybe you do a different division in the intermediate while hoping to graduate to that one later on. So I think that's important because you have to wear your body for the entire year, and you're only pleasing judges for a few minutes. So That's important to take into consideration. So for women, there's one outlier here. So of the four divisions that are at most shows, bikini fitness figure physique. The outlier is fitness. So that is a division that actually has a gymnastics routine component. So there is kind of a prerequisite for that. And what I typically tell people is, unless you grew up and have a pretty significant gymnastics background, just forget about fitness completely. You know, pretend it's not even there. It's a high barrier of entry for sure. So if we pull that out of the equation, we're left with bikini, figure, physique. And those are presented like that in ascending order of muscularity and ascending expectations for conditioning. So bikini, you can typically get away with being a little bit softer, a little bit smaller. Figure, they want to see a little bit more size, a little bit more shape, a little bit more conditioning. And physique is where it really pays off to be a little bit more, you know, razor sharp, a little bit more full, a little bit more developed. So I would say figure and physique are, you know, not necessarily interchangeable, but there's definitely a very easy crossover potential between the two. You know, they both rely on the same quarter turn poses. Physique then adds more on top of that. But you can take somebody, you know, if they win their division, if they win their class in figure, you could very likely put them on stage in physique at the same show and they'd probably do okay. They'd certainly look like they belong there. So, bikini is a little bit different just because, you know, the emphasis is on different areas. You know, they really want to see legs and glutes more developed. More emphasis is placed on making the waist as small as possible. You'll see that emphasis in figure and physique as well, but it's really, really, really rewarded a lot more in bikini too. So they want to see that tightness there. They want to see that tightness in the midsection. Upper body development is less critical just because there isn't really a chance in the posing to show it off. I mean, you can, you know, work in a little bit of a lat flare. You can kind of round that shoulder off a little bit in the front pose and in the back pose as well, but it's not like you're getting a chance to really show what you got. So if you really enjoy working upper body and really, you know, want to focus on a high degree of development there, you can do it in bikini, but it's not going to score you a lot of points. You know, you're not going to get a lot of chance to show that off. So that's it. It's hard to explain visually, but that is my thought process that I go through when I'm trying to guide somebody on where they should compete, what division. And the most important thing, as I said, is where do you want to compete? You know, across the spectrum, visually, where do you see yourself? Maybe not right now, but where would you like to see yourself in 5 years, 10 years? And that's what we should focus on. And then, you know, maybe that means that we take longer to compete. You know, there's no rush. You don't get bonus points for, you know, doing a show right now. Ultimately, you've got to work on the physique that you want more than anything else. So hopefully that helps a little bit. It's one of those things, as with all things, there's no definitive answer. There's a whole lot of gray area. So I wanted to talk this week in our next installment also of our bodybuilding myths. This is an easy one. Somebody lobbed a softball at me here, so I'm going to take it. And this is about spot reduction. You know, how can I get rid of that last little bit of fat in my lower abs or on my glutes or, you know, between the glute and hamstring, et cetera. And okay, somebody's lobbing up that softball. I'm going to tee up on it right now. Okay, you can't, obviously, and I think most of us know that. And I've talked to a lot of people who absolutely know that, and they still ask the question anyway because they think that, okay, that's probably true, but there's something I can do, right? And the answer is no, there isn't. You know, the secret to losing fat in those areas is just to lose fat. And then your body, your genetics, your hormones, you know, your body makeup will determine where it comes from. So, you know, we lose fat. We don't lose it evenly throughout our entire body when we lose it. So it's going to come from some areas first, and then you're going to hold on to it in some areas later as well. So, and you'll know where that is. You know, if you've ever been stage lean before, you know, you go into the gym and, you know, you're in there in your shorts and your tank top and everybody's like, holy crap, you are shredded. And be like, yeah, well, I've still got some fat here. But everybody thinks you're ridiculous. But, you know, I mean, you've seen it. You hold on to it in your lower back or in your triceps or in your lower abs or in your glutes or wherever. Everybody does. Everybody's got that spot. And the only thing that you can do about it is just improve your overall level of conditioning. So, you know, there's no sense in doing abs every day. There's no sense on doing all of your cardio on the step mill to try and, you know, lose fat from your glutes. You know, it doesn't matter. So, stop overtraining certain body parts in an attempt to lean them out, and don't just stick to one form of cardio because you think it's going to improve your conditioning in a specific area, because it's not. So there you go. There's another myth shattered. Put it on the wall. All right. So first main topic for the day, gym efficiency. So how do we go into the gym and get the job done without taking a massive 3-hour chunk out of our day to do it? The first question is, you know, why do we care? Why does this matter? I love working out. I love going to the gym. I love long workouts. You know, this isn't a problem. All right, great. Well, maybe this isn't for you, but I would also challenge you and say it is a problem. You know, I've talked to a lot of people early on who say, you know, I go into the gym and I work out for 3 hours. And I'm like, holy crap. Okay. If you're working out for 3 hours, you're going to fall into two categories of people. 2% of the people who work out for 3 hours are just absolute metabolic beasts with a high motor who can support extremely high volume training, but still probably shouldn't all the time. The other 98% of those people are just not doing things effectively. If you can go for 3 hours, the odds are that you're just not doing things right. You have poor mind-muscle connection. Your technique is bad. You're just not working the muscle. You're throwing weights around. You might be exhausting yourself. You might be fatiguing yourself, but you're not challenging yourself in an appropriate way. So efficiency, think of it this way. If you can go in and hit a workout in 20 minutes and feel like you got just an absolutely epic pump and walk out of there with a job well done, that's pretty cool. That's better than taking an hour and a half to do the same job. So that's not really the goal when I talk about efficiency, but when we go to extremes, that's something to consider, you know, trying to do more in less time. So as your mind-muscle connection improves, and we talked about that before last week with tension, and talking about the importance of mind-muscle connection there, it makes a shorter workout more effective because it means that you're able to squeeze a little bit more out of every rep. And then conversely, you know, if you are focusing less on efficiency and more just on maximizing your results, you know, if you really improve that mind-muscle connection to the point where you can pretty thoroughly exhaust a muscle group in, let's say, 40 to 45 minutes, but you push for 50 to 55 minutes, you know, going a little bit beyond, you know, the kind of volume that's really necessary, those extra minutes, if they're used wisely, the extra sets that you work in there can be really valuable. Those can be the ones that really make a difference. So finding a way to bring yourself to that threshold where you're reaching muscle failure towards the end of a workout, being able to do that in, you know, less than an hour as opposed to 2 hours, that's cool. That's great, because we want to spend some more time in that space. So so efficiency, as far as, you know, the main part of the conversation here is about logistics. How do we go into the gym and just be more effective with our time? So a lot of this stuff is common sense, but I think it's good to just kind of put it all out there, evaluate it, consider it, see what applies to you. Because, you know, here's the thing. I mean, this is my career. This is what I do. You know, I go to the gym, I teach people how to lift, I train people for shows, I write diets, etc. I mean, this is what I do. That being said, there's only so much time in the day I want to spend in the gym. So I like to be more efficient there too, because I've got other stuff to do as well. I've got to work. I've got a household to take care of. I've got other stuff to do. So, you know, I've got food to prep, all this kind of stuff. So just like everybody else, I mean, it's good to spend time in the gym, but it's good to be efficient with it. Maximize your time there so you can get out, move on, and do other stuff. So the first thing is go in with a plan. And if your plan is to go in there and wing it, that's not a plan. So go in with a plan written down, whether it's a workout that, you know, your coach has provided with you, something that you've downloaded and printed out from a website, or if you've got your workout logbook and you've already kind of written in, at the very least, a skeletal structure of what your workout's going to look like. Like, you know, you go in for chest. Okay, move one, I'm going to do some kind of a barbell press. Move two, I'm going to do some kind of a fly. And then you can kind of go through. You don't want to necessarily write yourself into a corner where you're like, okay, move two is a cable fly. I'm going to do that. And then you go and somebody's using the cables and you're like, oh crap, now what do I do? Okay. So you can say, well, I'm going to do a cable fly. Okay, well, the cables are taken. Well, there's a machine fly over there. I can do that, or I can do dumbbell flies. You give yourself a little bit more freedom. So at least having some kind of a skeletal structure of an idea written up. So you have an idea of how many total sets you're going to do, the rep ranges that you're going to look for, where you're going to try and throw in some higher intensity techniques, you know, where you're going to try and work in a drop set, maybe think about that kind of stuff, but go in with a plan. And in that plan, you know, simple is always easier. So if you program in supersets, you're programming in opportunities for people to get in your way. So especially if you go there during peak hours, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later. So if you plug in straight sets and you leave yourself a little flexibility, like I'm going to do some kind of a press here, some kind of a fly here, then you can kind of plug in the details as you go along, but you've got the basic structure in place, and you can kind of, you know, as you're working, as you're resting between sets, you can kind of eyeball what's available and what's not and plan your next move. So always be thinking ahead. But that being said, I mean, supersets are great, and especially if you can work in a superset without having to move somewhere. So you can, like, you know, do your cable fly and then bring some dumbbells with you and do a floor press on the ground between your sets or something like that. I mean, as an example. So that's worth considering. You know, simplicity will always yield more efficient results in a crowded gym, but supersets can pack a lot of bang for your buck if you know you've got the ability to pull it off and not have a lot of people get in your way. So, or conversely, get in a lot of people's way, because that's often what we do when we're supersetting and taking up multiple spots all over the gym, is we're just irritating everybody else. So know what the plan is and then move quickly. I always tell people, you know, when you're doing a set, you want all of the reps to be, you know, very slow, methodical, controlled, focusing on the negative, focusing on the squeeze, minimal rest between reps just to keep the tension there. But then, you know, during your rest periods, you know, keep an eye on them. And then also in between movements, move with a purpose. So if you're carrying around your gym bag, you know, I mean, don't be like, oh man, I'm tired. All right, I'm going to be thinking about bending over and picking up this bag. I mean, you know, you're in there to work, you know, pick up your shit and move it, you know, get a move on, go to the next place. You've got stuff to do. Maintain that workmanlike mentality. That's important. So move with a purpose while you're in there. So be flexible. You know, we talked about having some kind of a plan written in, a skeletal plan or a written plan, but be flexible. So, you know, don't necessarily write yourself into a corner where you're like, I'm going to use this machine, and you go there and it's out of order, or there's a group of three guys that are taking turns on it and they're going to be there for 30 minutes. You know, I mean, that happens all the time. But just, you know, think of like, okay, I'm going to do some kind of a press here. I'm going to do some kind of a horizontal pull here. I'm going to do some kind of a squat here, and give yourself some freedom to move, and also some freedom to reorder things. Like if you're like, yeah, I really want to do that movement, somebody's on there right now, you know, just switch the order in your written plan. And you know, the one thing that you can't ever allow yourself to do is wait around for something to open up. So, I will go so far as to say, if something isn't available before I start walking over there, I'm not even going to bother. And part of that is just, you know, my introverted personality and just not wanting to talk to anybody if I don't absolutely have to, asking them how much longer they're going to be. But also, you know, I just want to go there and get to work. I don't want to wait even for 10 seconds. I'm moving with a purpose. So be flexible, you know, have that established plan, but also allow yourself to deviate from it rather than waiting around. Think about when during the day you go. A workout at peak hours at pretty much any gym is always going to be slower than a workout at any other time of day. So a lot of your workout availability and the, you know, the time that you go is going to be dictated by, you know, everything else that you're doing, your work schedule, et cetera. So a lot of people just don't have a lot of options. I will say that if you go to the gym at 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that, going at any other time will be more effective. Any other time at all. Even rush hour in the morning is going to be way better than that time when everybody's getting off work. So if that's the only time you've ever worked out, I would challenge you to reorganize your sleep schedule a little bit and go at a different time in the morning. It may be an eye-opening experience. I haven't gone to a gym in peak hours, oh man, except for once, maybe in the last 15 years, because the last time I went, it was like standing room only. I couldn't do anything. I'm like, this is awful. How do people do this? It's just miserable. So going during peak hours is definitely a recipe for inefficiency. And, you know, every gym is different. You're going to find some that are a little bit less crowded, a little bit less packed. One of the gyms here in Knoxville that I go to, it's about the size of a Walmart, and its parking lot looks like a Walmart parking lot. And I drive past it as I'm, you know, going to Home Depot or whatever instead. And the parking lot is just absolutely packed and overflowing. And I just think, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine what it's like inside there. Because even when I go in the morning and the parking lot's, you know, one third full, it's still like, man, there's a lot of people in here. This is yucky. So worth considering, at least. Workout partners, another thing to consider, they slow you down. They can be great. They can be really helpful. But they will force you to take longer. So I'm not saying ditch your workout partner, but I am saying that if you work out with somebody, you'll need to spend a little bit of extra effort to make sure that you're keeping each other moving. So, when you're pressed for time, like there will be specific days where you go in and you're like, I've only got this much time. That's probably not the time to bust out your leg workout with 45 sets in it. That might be a good time to hit either a smaller muscle group, something like, you know, chest, where you can get a really effective workout in with 15 sets, or something where you have a really high degree of mind-muscle connection, where you can get a great workout in with less volume. Like, you know, if you really feel it with arms and you're like, you know, I can do 8 sets for biceps and 8 sets for triceps and feel like my arms are going to bust out of their sleeves. Great. That's a good one to be able to hit when you're pressed for time. So, save those longer workouts or the workouts where you're trying to bring up problem areas for the days when you're not pressed for time. Some people will, you know, during the work week, Monday through Friday, they try to schedule in a couple days off then, knowing that, okay, I can hit it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then I'm going to work out on the weekends as well. So, if, you know, back is a weak point for you, save that for one of those weekend days, you know, when you've got more freedom and more flexibility. So just think about, you know, what workouts you're doing on what days. Don't be afraid to mess up the order of your workouts as well. Just keep track of it. But, you know, if you usually do things like, okay, it's chest and then arms are always after chest and then legs are always after arms, don't be afraid to deviate from that. There's no value in, you know, being really regimented in that if a little bit more flexibility will give you some options for more productive sessions. So, invest, if you don't already have some, in some Bluetooth headphones, specifically because, and you should also, I think, even though most gyms will have signs posted saying that you can't do this, you should have a gym bag with you. Look at me, making people break the rules now. For a lot of what we do, we need to carry a lot of stuff around with us, and keeping it in a locker room is not necessarily always practical. So, I have a ton of stuff in my gym bag that I carry with me at all times. I take two phones with me into the gym. One of them is my actual phone, and I keep it on me for, you know, emergencies or whatever. And then the other one is an old iPhone that I have that I don't use for cellular or text or anything like that. It's basically just a music player. That's all it is. So it connects to Wi-Fi, and that's it. So I keep both of those in my bag, and with Bluetooth headphones, I don't have to have anything in my pocket. If you've got a phone in your pocket, you're going to pull it out between sets, you're going to start messing with your playlist, you're going to look at your text messages, you're going to pull up Facebook, and all of that stuff needs to be absolutely non-negotiable, can't happen. Nothing is going to make you waste more time in the gym than your phone. Nothing is going to distract you more than your phone. And nothing is going to ruin a workout more than your phone or a really bad workout partner, I guess. But Bluetooth headphones will let you keep that sucker tucked away in your gym bag. You know, decide what you're going to listen to beforehand, get it going, and then just let it run. Don't micromanage your playlist, just let it go. You need to be focusing on what your body is doing, on how the exercises feel, and what your mind-muscle connection is. You know, having good music helps, but it should not be what you're focusing on. So it should be good, absolutely. I mean, good music, it puts you in the zone, it helps, but don't micromanage it. Just stick it in your bag and let it go. So Bluetooth headphones will kind of help detach you from that a little bit. I picked up a set off of Amazon a while back that were like $35. They're over-the-ear headphones rather than earbuds, just because nothing stays in my ear, so the over-the-ear ones help tremendously. They're great. Sound quality is good. Connectivity is good. No issues with those. And they're holding up really well. I've had them for about 10 months, I think. So, actually track your rest periods. Typically, now this depends a lot on your your rep ranges, how heavy you're going. So if you're working some really low rep stuff, you know, longer rest periods make sense. If you're working higher rep stuff, we typically want to sustain that burn and go with shorter rest periods. I'd say on average, about 45 seconds rest is good to go. So try this. Next time, this will be very eye-opening for some people, and other people will be like, yeah, I already do this. Put in a really good set, something where you're like, okay, man, that was brutal. That was really awesome. I feel like I really made a difference there. That was a really, really good workout. And then set your timer for 45 seconds and start your next set as soon as that timer goes off. And by that, I mean, you know, don't wait for the timer to go off and then, okay, I'm going to turn it off. Now let me go get the weights again. No, be ready to go once that timer hits 45 seconds and see how that feels. And for more of you than not, I would imagine it's going to feel like that was a really short rest period. Like, man, I'm still breathing heavy. I haven't recovered yet. And, you know, when we're trying to get a muscle to respond and grow, you know, part of progressive overload, we need the muscle to do more than it really is willing to, or more than it thinks it's capable of doing. And cutting down on your rest a little bit is crucial in that as well. So, time those rest periods. You know, I don't need you to keep a timer, keep a stopwatch around your neck and, you know, be pushing buttons, you know, yet another thing to distract you. But, you know, if there's clocks in the gym, just keep your eye on that, or just, you know, be more cognizant of the passage of time around you. And I think if you spend less time being distracted, less time engaging in idle chat with people, less time on your phone, I think you'll find that it's easier to be productive and keep those rest periods to more of a reasonable time frame. So, and then I talked about, you know, supersets a little bit previously, where, you know, keeping things simple can be really helpful. But at the same time, if you're looking to get a lot done in less time, supersetting is a good way to go. So kind of contrary advice there, but it depends on the situation. You know, if you're in a really crowded gym and you want to superset, you know, one machine with a different machine, it's probably a really bad idea. But especially if you're going to like superset two dumbbell exercises, like, you know, work a dumbbell press, like a chest press, and then go into a fly for some burnout reps towards the end of that, that can be really effective. You know, you don't even necessarily have to drop weights or anything like that. Or go the other way, I'm sorry. So you do a fly, which is always going to be a lighter move. So go for a really good amount of fatigue and then go into the press, which is a movement where you have a lot more strength. So you're already fatigued. So if you've been doing flies with, you know, 35-pound dumbbells and you go and you hit 15 reps there or whatever, you're really getting that good burn, and then you just start pressing those same 35-pound dumbbells. 35-pound press, hey, that's easy. But, you know, after doing all those flies, ooh, yeah, that's a nice little finisher. So so supersets can be helpful too. So there you go, gym efficiency in a nutshell, why it matters and how we can improve it. So the next and final topic for today is, you know, I should have some special effects. I should have some sleigh bells going off right now, but yeah, the special effects are not in the budget, unfortunately. So, coping with holidays, how do we do it? You know, how do you get through a holiday season and, you know, stay on track with your plan? Why should we care? You know, why can't I just relax and enjoy life, etc.? So the crux of this all comes down to your long-term planning. So, around most parts of the country, you know, the competitive season starts around April. You can always find shows earlier than that. I know Florida has some shows in February and March. Other states do as well. But by and large, you know, all of the NPC state schedules are going to kick in around April. And the reason for that is because you can typically start your prep around the start of January and be ready for an April show. So, a lot of people really, really like to avoid being on prep through the holidays. So keep in mind, if you do a February or March show, yeah, you're going to be on prep through the holidays and it's going to suck and you might hate life a little bit, especially if your prep gets off to a slow start and your coach, or, you know, you, if you're your own coach, you can honestly evaluate yourself and say, yeah, I can't really afford a cheat meal or a refeed here. I've got to keep things nice and tight. So oops, that sucks. So that's a failure of planning more than anything else. So the first thing I would do is, when thinking about your long-term plans, think about how important this stuff is to you. For some people, they're like, I love holidays. I love spending time with the family. I don't care. I couldn't care less about the food. It's secondary to me. I will diet through Christmas, through New Year's, and it doesn't bother me at all. It's fine. For other people, it's a big part of their life. You know, maybe it's a part of their culture. It's just, you know, something that they grew up with. It's their chance to go and see family that maybe they don't get to see regularly. So the food is a part of that. And yeah, I would say, you know, being on prep during something like that is probably a mistake. So evaluate that and think about it. And, you know, just take that into consideration with part of your long-term planning. So it's kind of my job as coach, when people ask me this, to kind of, you know, to always be making the decision that is best for your prep and not necessarily telling you what you want to hear. So people will say, what can I get away with? And I'll be like, nothing. You got to be on plan. So bring your Tupperware. Happy Christmas. You know, I mean, that's sometimes that is the answer. And, you know, if we're on plan, we can get away with a refeed or a measured cheat meal or something like that. Cool. We'll do it. Absolutely. And we'll time it such that, you know, maybe we'll make some adjustments in the week to help make that a little bit more effective. Like, you know, we tighten up intake for the few days leading up into that to kind of, you know, deplete the body a little bit. And then we get that refeed in there, good flush of calories coming in. So it can be used strategically as well. So, you know, talk it out with your coach, or, you know, just understand your body and know what you can get away with, how to kind of force the issue a little bit, how to make it work if it's something that's important to you. So, you know, but these can be things like, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's are the big ones, but also think about, like, you know, anniversaries. You know, is your significant other really going to be thrilled with you if you say, I can't have my anniversary dinner because I'm on prep and I got a show in 6 weeks? Stuff like that might not fly. So that might be something, you know, you'll definitely want to address that with your coach and say, yeah, there's going to be something at 6 weeks out, so I need to make sure I'm ready for that. And I can, you know, I need to make sure that I've earned that by the time that comes around. So that's important. What you don't want to do is tell your coach 3 days before, oh yeah, I have to have a cheat meal in 3 days, because that will cause your coach to pull out his already gray hair. So just things to consider. Sometimes the answer also is just that you've got to suck it up. You've just got to deal with it and say, well, all right, this is what has to happen. You know, my long-term plan, either I didn't pay attention to it before I started this whole process, or, you know, I've, you know, prep hasn't been going well. I'm kind of behind. I can't afford to, you know, fall further behind here. I've got to stay on track. So sometimes you just got to suck it up. And like I said, bring your Tupperware. Merry Christmas. Have fun with it. You know, if you're following a flexible plan, and you aren't yet at the stage of having poverty macros, where your carbs are measured more in micrograms than grams, and you know you've got some carbs and fats to play with, you can get away with some of these holiday indulgences. You can make it work within the structure of a macro-based plan. It will take some work, because a lot of these things are like homemade recipes, and when you're on prep, precision counts. So you can't just say, okay, well, you know, I had this and I think it was about this. You do a little bit of research, look into the recipe, you know, add it as a recipe under your app, if it's MyFitnessPal or whatever, and do your best to get an accurate representation of what the macros are. One thing that I will always do in a situation like that is, once I get my plate put together, take a picture of it, and then you can kind of do a little forensic breakdown on it later. That way, even if you go over your macros a little bit, you know exactly what the numbers are. You can report back, you can log it on your own, and know, okay, well, I was on track mostly, or I went a little bit over here, or I was actually under on this, whatever. But one of the beautiful things about a macro-based plan is it does allow you to get away with some indulgences like that for special occasions. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. So it does take a little bit more work to do it and make it happen with the degree of accuracy that's appropriate, but it's still an option. So it may also work, like I said, as a cheat meal or a refeed. But if you're doing your own prep, you've got to be honest with yourself. And if you're working with a coach, you've got to trust their judgment. So I will always tell people, like, yeah, no, you can't get away with this now. You know, oftentimes that doesn't necessarily have an impact on what actually happens. I'll say, yep, no, we can't get away with this. You got to keep it tight. And then the next thing I hear is like, okay, well, I tried, but I failed. And so then we'll clean up the best we can. Just keep in mind that everything you do during your prep is going to end up on stage with you. All the good things, all the bad things. And, you know, it may be that, you know, you make some bad decisions and you get up on stage and you're like, I'm okay with this. You know, I didn't put 100% into it, but I put, you know, 95% into it. So, you know, cool, I'm okay with that. For a lot of people, that's non-negotiable. They're like, no, 100% or nothing. So consider where you're at, consider what you expect out of yourself, and then act accordingly. That's the big thing. But always be honest with yourself. Don't say, oh, okay, well, you know, especially if you've competed before, and say, okay, well, you know, I'm 10 weeks out now. And versus the last show, you know, my last show, I didn't come in with the kind of conditioning that I wanted. And I'm actually 2 pounds heavier at 10 weeks out now than I was then. Yeah, I mean, there's probably a good chance that you should probably skip that cheat meal. You know, unless you've been starving yourself, in which case, you know, a flux of calories might help. But again, you need to be honest with yourself. You need to have a good understanding of how your body's going to respond to that. And it needs to be productive. So that, again, all this comes back to long-term planning. And a lot of this stuff is easily avoidable as long as you pick the right shows. So I can't overstate the importance of proper long-term planning. It's huge. It is so huge. One other thing to consider on this is the question of, and I kind of touched on this previously, quality of life and maintaining some of it versus maximizing your results and your potential on stage. You know, for some people, being able to survive a prep, bring a respectable level of conditioning, maybe a personal best level of conditioning, even with, you know, effort that was maybe not 100%, that's good, because, you know, they didn't commit a homicide, they didn't land in jail during their prep, they didn't alienate their family, they didn't get locked out of the house or anything like that. So those kind of things can be victories. For a lot of people, they are willing to make those sacrifices, and, you know, maybe, you know, take it to the extremes, maybe sacrifice some relationships, and, you know, maybe lose some friends. I mean, it's happened before. In order to get the results that they're looking for. So you've got to be able to lay out your own priorities for yourself, you know, lay out your own value system, know what's important to you, know what's important to the people around you, and then take all those things into consideration and make an appropriate decision. So I always tell people that, you know, I say, this is what your physique needs or doesn't need right now. One other thing that a good prep coach should always be taking into consideration, though, is, you know, what's going to cause somebody to break versus bending. And, you know, making sure that you always understand that, you know, as much as you want your clients to all be robots, they're people, and people have limits. So, you know, I've certainly had those instances where I'm like, you know, biologically, you know, physiologically, your body does not need this cheat meal right now. But I can tell just from talking to you, from reading your emails, et cetera, I can tell that you need this or it's game over. So we're going to do it. And I'm going to place some limitations on it. I'm going to try and make sure it stays reasonable. We're going to mitigate the damage here a little bit, but it's got to happen. So sacrifices will always need to be made. And the question is, you know, is it worth it for you? What degree of sacrifice is worth it for you? And that's always a question that everybody has to ask for themselves. You know, I can't answer that for anybody. So a lot of this is, you know, just using proper judgment. And then I'm kind of along for the ride and trying to help people manage that. And yeah, another voice for people to bounce ideas off of. So, as Christmas comes around, you know, I certainly hope that everybody has an enjoyable holiday, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, whatever it happens to be. So enjoy it with whoever you're with. Make the most of it. If you are on prep, make some good decisions. Follow the advice of your coach. And if you're not, you know, I mean, it's absolutely a time to, you know, enjoy. So eat up. You know, the extra calories that you bring in now will just be put to good use for your workout on Monday when it comes around. So make the most of it. So from everyone, that would be me and the dogs and the wife here at Five Star Physique, I wish everybody the very best for the holiday season. I'll be back next week with another episode. And in the meantime, if you want to catch me, if you want to email me, Darren@fivestarfitness.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Five Star Physique, Instagram @fivestarfit, or on the website at www.fivestarphysique.com. Thanks again for listening. Appreciate you hanging around. Have a great week.